Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to SportsMod's new football podcast, The Dugout. I'm Pascal Lemaire and I'm here with Barney Corkill. On this week's pod, we'll be discussing the latest January transfers, whether Chelsea are in a relegation battle, and much more. Barnes, let's start at the top with the title race. Just 1 point separates the top three after 22 games. Who's favourite for you?
Well, for me, I think it's still Man City. I know they're third place. They're 1 point behind Arsenal and Leicester at the moment. But I think when they get a fully fit team back, a fully fit squad, obviously we don't know when that's going to be because Kompany, there's still a big question over him. But I think the title race could more or less hinge on when he does come back because the record with him this season has been superb defensively. But without him, it's been dreadful. And I think once he's there, he not only gives confidence to the defenders around him, but the spine of the team is so much stronger. They've had some key injuries, the likes of Silva's been injured this season, Aguero's been injured this season. You're talking about their best players there as well. So once they get that fully fit squad, I think they would be favourites for me if they do get that fully fit squad at any time of the season. I think the likes of Arsenal and Leicester have sort of taken advantage of the fact that Man City haven't been at their best because they haven't been fully fit. Obviously, Arsenal have had their injury problems as well, and I do think this current squad has got a bit more about them than a lot of additions in the past, that the ones that, you know, generally fell away in January or something, got knocked out of pretty much every cup competition and then ended up battling for fourth rather than the title. I think this one's got a bit more about them than those teams, but for me, I still think they're second best to Man City when both sides have a fully fit squad. I think Arsenal certainly will push them all the way, but for me, Man City get the edge. And Leicester, you know, they've gone off the boil recently. We always said what would happen if Mahrez and Vardy both went off the boil, and that has happened recently. They've only scored, as a team, 2 goals in the last 5 games, only won one of the last 5 games. But I still think they deserve to be in contention. They deserve to be in the argument because they've only lost 2 games all season, which is the lowest in the Premier League. And they've shown throughout the first half of the campaign that they have got the quality to cause problems. So I certainly think they deserve to be in contention. But I think for me, Man City are the favourites.
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple of weeks back, Arsenal, they were sort of the market leaders, but now City, they're favourites with the bookies at about evens. And just looking at the odds for Leicester there, they're still, you know, well odds on to get a top four finish, which, you know, I've seen most of Leicester's recent games. And I have to say that, yeah, like you said, they really haven't impressed me. You know, they drew at Villa, Mahrez missed that penalty, and, you know, Vardy's really gone off the boil after that obviously incredible scoring run that he had. And I just think that, I mean, they did get that win at Spurs, which was really out of the blue, but, you know, I watched that game, and they really didn't do much in that. They really hung on. Spurs, you know, they hit the bar through Kane, and, you know, Leicester nicked it with that. It was a great header from Hoof from that corner, but they didn't really do enough for me. And when you look at, I think the teams, you know, there's only a point separating those two, but when you look at the teams behind Spurs, they're only 5 points behind Arsenal and Leicester. And even, I know United, you know, they, you know, there's so much pressure on Van Gaal, and they still haven't really played that well, but, you know, they went and won at Anfield. That was a pretty impressive win they got there, and they're only 7 points behind the top, which really isn't that much when you consider how, you know, unconvincing, you know, Arsenal, they were rubbish against Stoke the other day. I mean, they didn't have Ozil or Sanchez there, and they seem to really lack, you know, either that sort of firepower in attack or the creativity that Ozil brings. And I mean, I wasn't too convinced about Arsenal, and like I said, I think City, I think they should be favourites at the moment, but I think you certainly can't, I don't think it's just a three-horse race there. I think Spurs and United are definitely in it, and then below that, you'd probably say it's probably going to be one of these five teams, and the way Leicester have been playing recently, I can't really see it being them, to be honest.
Yeah, I think with the Arsenal point, the fact that they drew against Stoke, it wasn't a good performance by them, but in years gone by, they probably would have lost that match. They've got a terrible record at the Britannia, and again, that goes back to me saying I think they've got a bit more about them. Generally, over the past few years, during that 9-year trophy jump before they won the FA Cup the last 2 seasons, it was always, once they had a setback, they struggled to recover from that, whether that was injuries or a loss of form. But, you know, this season they've done well at recovering from setbacks like that. In November they had a bit of a blip, but they've bounced back. They've been in fantastic form over the last couple of months. You know, the Champions League, when they lost their first few games and looked destined to go out, they battled through. I don't think they've got much of a hope against Barcelona in the next round, I've got to be honest, but they did very well to battle through against all the odds after losing their opening two games. And then even recently on Boxing Day when they were beaten 4-0 by Southampton, you know, Southampton went into that match in dreadful form. Arsenal were in very good form. Not many people expected a home win in that, but Arsenal got absolutely battered 4-0, but then they bounced back with that. They won the next three in a row. Two draws in a row recently against Liverpool and Stoke. They're probably fortunate to get a draw against Liverpool, considering Liverpool were very much on top in the first half. But again, they showed that they've got a bit of steel about them, which has probably been lacking in recent years.
I was wondering about Spurs, whether they can really do it this season, because I think, given that there's no one, say like Chelsea did last year, like really run away with it. And I think you look at Spurs, you know, their next sort of three games there, Palace away, who are in terrible form themselves, Norwich away, then Watford at home. All three of those, you know, teams Spurs would really fancy being. If they can get 9 points out of nine from them and, you know, maybe some of the other teams drop out, I think Spurs, they could certainly get in. And I think, like I've said about, I think Leicester might drop out a bit. I think Spurs could really challenge Arsenal and City for it. And I think Kane this season again, he's really proved that last season wasn't just a flash in the pan. He hasn't got as many goals as he had last season, but he's still about one every other game, his record. And I think he's really good at holding the ball up, and the way that, you know, we talked about their young core before and how impressive Pochettino's done there. And when you hear the players speak about Pochettino as well, he really seems to have won over a lot of players, and I think he certainly seems to have been an excellent appointment by them. And when you see the way that the likes of Dele Alli and even say Eric Lamella, he was completely out in the cold in his first season, he's really come on. And the quality they've got and how solid they are at the back, they've got the best defence by, I think it's two or three goals, they've only conceded 18, I think it is. And if you've got that defensive stability and then the young players, like, who all look so hungry, I think Spurs really do have a shot this season.
Yeah, I certainly agree that they're dark horses, and as you mentioned, there is only 5 points separating them, and in this title race, that's not too much, because the top teams have been dropping points. No team has taken the title race by the scruff of the neck, which could be open a door for Tottenham if they can build a bit of consistency. I'd say draws have probably been their biggest problem. They've drawn 9 games of their 22 this season. If they can turn a few of them into victories, then certainly I can see them challenging for the title, because I'm a big fan of this Tottenham team. I think they've got a really nice balance. You mentioned their defensive record there, but obviously they score goals at the other end with Kane. Eriksen got a couple last time out against Sunderland, so I think they've got a really good balance, as you mentioned, a really young team. And if they don't challenge for the title this season, it should be good experience, because I think they're the youngest squad in the Premier League. I think I'm right in saying that. So seasons to come, if they can keep that squad together, I think the future looks pretty bright for them.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really good for Spurs, but one team certainly not in it this season are the reigning champions, Chelsea. You know, they've been poor consistently, obviously lost Mourinho, who led them to the title last season. They are, I mean, since Gus Hiddink came in, they are still unbeaten in him under him, but they've drawn 4 of the last 5, and none of those have come against the top 4 either. And I think certainly they haven't really been that convincing. You look at some of their recent results, you know, 3 of the draws have been really high scoring ones at home. You know, 2-2 against Watford, they drew last weekend as well. And when you look at where they are on the table, 14th, only 4 points above the drop zone. You know, people say, oh, Chelsea are never going to be in the relegation dogfight, but the way it's going at the moment, are they actually in a relegation battle?
I don't think so. I think there is too much quality in this Chelsea squad. You've been expecting them to climb away for a long time, and it hasn't really happened yet. But for me, I still consider a top four challenge more likely for them than a relegation battle, to be honest. I know they're 14 really? Points, I think it is, off the top four, and it is a big, big ask for them to get back into that race, but the quality they've got in the team, if they start firing, you know they've got the quality to go on a good run and just start shooting up the table. They've got a bit of a gap to the top half, but then that top half is pretty bunched up together up to fifth. So I'm still expecting them, even though we haven't really seen much proof of it or much evidence that this could happen so far this season. I still expect them to go on a bit of a run. They do need to improve, though, as you mentioned. Hiddink has come in still unbeaten. I think when he came in, he had the best win percentage in Premier League history of managers who have managed 10 games or more, or something like that. It was an impressive statistic, and obviously he still only lost one game in both of his spells in charge of Chelsea, but he needs to turn those draws into victories. You mentioned the home draws there, the high scoring ones. Stamford Bridge is not a fortress anymore. For so long it was just, you go to Stamford Bridge, you don't expect anything. A draw was a very good result, but they've only won 4 of their 12 league games at home this season. They haven't won back-to-back at home in the league so far this season. It's just not a fortress anymore. Teams go there and expect to get something. Everton very, very nearly got something last time out there, and probably should have got something after John Terry got that offside goal in the 98th, 99th minute, something like that. So it's just not a fortress. It doesn't hold the fear anymore. They need to get that back, and the only way of doing that is to pick up a few good victories.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking at their fixtures coming up. There's a big one this weekend. You know, if they are going to maybe try and get up to the top four, I mean, looking at the odds as well, I mean, they're 20-1 to get a top four finish and 66-1 to go down. So obviously the bookies agree with you that they think it's more likely that a top four finish might be possible. But they go to Arsenal this weekend. That's a real challenge for them. I mean, we know Arsenal haven't been great the last couple of weeks, but to go to the Emirates, where, you know, Arsenal are usually pretty strong, if they can get a win there, I mean, they beat Arsenal earlier on in the season, didn't they, with that, was it Arsenal went down to 9 men in that game, yeah. I think, and certainly it's a real test in this weekend if they can really turn some form around, because when you look at their recent results, they really haven't been impressive. You know, that game they had against United, you know, United were the better team at Old Trafford that day, and Chelsea really didn't do much there. I mean, the one win they have had in recent weeks, that 3-0 win at Crystal Palace, you know, Palace have been woeful the last few weeks. I don't think you can read too much into that. And like I say, drawing at home to West Brom, drawing at home to Everton, like, very fortunate in that. I mean, you could look to the West Brom game and say they were kind of unlucky that both the West Brom goals were just really good hits from Gardner and McLean. But yeah, like I said, it's just not a fortress, Stamford Bridge, and I just really can't see them. I can't really see them finishing much higher than, say, maybe 8th potentially this season. I just think that it's going to be quite hard to get the players up for it unless they go on a run of maybe 5, 6, or 7 wins in a row now, because this, like you said, I think it's, what is it, 14 points to the top four. That's too big a gap, I think, to claw back.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big ask, and I would be very surprised if they do make it all the way into the top four. But I just keep coming back to the point where a team with the likes of Hazard and Costa, Terry in there, you know, Oscar, William's been fantastic this season, a team with all them in there, they can't be down in the bottom half come the end of the season. I know they've defied me so far this season, a lot of teams have, but Chelsea, they've just got too much quality, I think, to be languishing down there. I certainly don't think they're really going to be sucked into a relegation battle, and I think Hiddink, he steadied the ship somewhat, as we say, there needs to be more improvement, but I can see them on an upward turn now, I think.
Yeah, one thing Chelsea haven't done so far, actually, is sign a player in January. Them and Villa, the bottom club, they're the only two clubs not to sign anyone, obviously two at the bottom, sort of 6-7 there, but a lot of the other clubs down there have made a lot of signings. Norwich, the busiest club, with 5 signings. Bournemouth have made 3. Let's start with Bournemouth. And the three sort of big players they've signed, Afobe, Graben, and Iturbe. What do you make of their business? Obviously, Afobe, he scored in his second appearance at the weekend. Really good goal against Norwich. What do you think make of their business?
Yeah, very good so far. I think it shows their ambition. It shows that they recognise that they need to score a few more goals. Obviously, they've been terribly unlucky with Callum Wilson getting injured for the season early on in the season, and Max Gradle you put in there as well in that bracket. So I think they did need some attacking reinforcements, and Afobe, it didn't work out for him at Arsenal when he was young, but he's been superb in the lower leagues. He's been an absolute goal machine for MK Dons and Wolves. So I think that was a signing that was always on the books, really. I thought a Premier League team would get him, and Bournemouth have got him. They spent a good amount of money on him, but his debut, I don't know if you remember, he missed a couple of really good chances. Yeah. I think that might have been debut nerves. He showed with his goal in the second game that was just a clinical finish. That was a striker who knows instinctively what to do, and it was a really clean hit, really clean finish. I think getting that first goal out of the way will be really important for him. I think he's going to be a very shrewd signing, and he might even be the difference between them staying up and going down. His goals, if he can contribute 10 or so before the end of the season, that would be a very good strike rate for Bournemouth. But he's capable of doing it. He's shown it in the lower league so far. And then to bring in Graben as well gives him a bit of depth in up front as well. So I think very shrewd business so far from Bournemouth.
Yeah, I think the thing with clubs like Bournemouth and Norwich as well, I mean, the amount of money they're spending is, you know, quite scary, I think, for, you know, clubs down there, because if they do go down, they really could be. I mean, I know Bournemouth, you know, they did break financial fair play regulations last season, but they can't really have an embargo because they're the Football League's financial fair play, not the Premier League. So, I mean, if Bournemouth come down, I think that's they know that if they come down, they could be in real trouble with a fine and embargo. So I think for them and the clubs like Norwich, if they can stay up this season, it's huge, not only for that reason, but also I think there's a new TV deal coming in, which, if you do stay in the Premier League, the windfall from that is absolutely massive. So I think with the amount of money that the likes of Bournemouth and Norwich are spending, it's all about trying to stay up this year. And then if you do stay up, you know that you're going to, not write it off, but you know that you're going to get a big payoff when this new TV deal kicks in. So I think that's kind of the thinking at the moment behind all their spending. But they certainly are, you know, laying it out. Even Norwich, I saw earlier, they've spent 20 million already in January, the biggest of those being the signing of Stephen Naismith for $8.5 million, which seems a lot for a player who's been in the cold at Everton. I mean, he's had his moments. You know, he had that hat trick after coming on against Chelsea earlier on in the season. But it seems a lot of money for a player who, yeah, like I said, hasn't had much football recently. Although, you know, certainly I think he could have his moments at Norwich, and they've lacked a regular striker all season long, Norwich, really. So, what do you make of that signing?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of money to splash on Naismith. I don't think he is an out-and-out goal scorer like Norwich need. I think when you compare that signing to that of Benacerbahce, similar amounts, I'd have a phobia all day long. Naismith, for me, a couple of seasons ago, I earmarked him as one of the most average players in the Premier League. He runs a lot, he puts work in, but he hasn't got that moment of quality. He's proved me wrong a bit over the last couple of seasons. He's a bit better than I initially thought he was. Obviously, you mentioned that hat-trick against Chelsea, the highlight of his Premier League career so far, and he can pop up with the odd important goal. He did so for Everton earlier this season quite a few times. He always seemed to be getting on the score sheet, and they always seem to be pretty important goals to win Everton points. But for £8.5 million, it's a lot to spend on them for, as you mentioned, a team down there in trouble, and if it goes wrong, they could be in really, really big trouble. So it's a gamble. I think it's a lot of money to splash on him, and for me personally, yeah, I'd rather have a phobia than him. I think Bournemouth have done better in that sense.
Yeah, and then you see that Southampton signed Charlie Austin for less than half of what Norwich paid for Naismith. You know, $4 million for Charlie Austin, who was it 16 goals he got when QPR got relegated last season, top English goal scorer in the Premier League, I think he was. I mean, I know Southampton, they were able to get him, you know, relatively on the cheap because his contract's up in the summer, so, you know, QPR just wanted to get something for him now as opposed to nothing for him in the summer. But I think you have to say, with Southampton, that looks like a fantastic piece of business for them. And it's weird, Southampton's striking situation, I think, because obviously recent weeks, Pelle's, I mean, he's been injured, but then on just at the weekend, he was on the bench, Shane Long preferred. So he's Pelle's really gone cold, and he doesn't seem to be the first choice anymore. Now that they've signed Austin, there seems to be a lot of depth up front for Southampton. I think he certainly would be one of the best signings of the window so far.
Yeah, I think that's a very good buy from them. As you mentioned, they have got options up front. I think Pelle's been on the bench because Long, he hasn't been able to be dropped so far. He's been playing pretty well, he scored a few goals, so there's no reason to take him out of the team. I'd still think Pelle would probably be the first choice when in normal circumstances, perhaps when Long isn't in such good form. But Austin will certainly push him for that. As you mentioned, he's got pedigree in the Premier League. He's proved that he can score goals here before, heavily linked with a move at the start of the season. But to get him in January for £4 million, it's a very good deal as well, as you mentioned, compared to some of the other signings, the big money the likes of Bournemouth, Norwich and Newcastle have spent so far. I think £4 million for him is a very, very good deal.
Yeah, you mentioned Newcastle there. They've made two signings, Jonjo Shelvey and Henri Savert. I think Shelvey, he certainly looks like a really good one. I think at the weekend on his debut, he played, well, for Newcastle's two goals in that game, he played two excellent passes in the build-up for those two. And it was weird what he said about the Swansea situation, how, you know, last season Swansea got their you know, highest ever points tally in the Premier League, and he was a key part of that under Gary Monk. But, you know, he said he didn't ask to leave Swansea, and he said that, you know, he'd just been told that he wasn't really part of Alan Curtis's plans at Swansea. And you have to wonder there why they've sold a player who's, you know, recent England call-up, certainly one of the more, you say, dynamic English midfielders about at the moment. I think he'd be a great signing for them.
I think it's absolute madness for Swansea to sell him. I've rated him pretty highly since his Liverpool days. You can see him improving. I can see a lot of Steven Gerrard in him. Obviously, he's not that quality at the moment. I don't think he ever will get to that quality, but I can see a lot of the same characteristics in him. He likes to drop deep, sometimes be the playmaker, and then sometimes get forward. He can ping a ball 50, 60 yards right to where he wants it, as he showed at the weekend. I think he's a very good player. I think £12 million is a lot of money for him. But I think for Newcastle to not only to get him, but to take him away from one of their relegation rivals as well, I think that's a very good bit of business. And for the life of me, I cannot see why Swansea, even wanted to get rid of him. I think he's one of their better players. He's certainly good enough, better than a 17th place team. If they're going to get out of the relegation battle, they need to keep players like him. And I think he's the quality of player who would be able to do that. Obviously, there seemed to be questions over his attitude. Alan Curtis was pretty critical of him throughout his reign, saying, you know, his performances have not been up to scratch so far for Swansea. But still, when he's on his game, he can be a match winner, he can be a difference maker. And I think for Swansea to even consider getting rid of him, yet alone to one of their relegation rivals, is absolute madness from them.
I think, yeah, we talk about, I mean, Newcastle, their two signings, I mean, we'd say they look pretty good, but apart from their, I mean, their northeast rivals, Sunderland, I wouldn't be all that convinced by their two signings. I mean, Dame Ndoye, the striker they brought in on loan from Trabzonspor, he was with Hull last season. He had a couple of goals here and there, but didn't really do much for them. And then the other one, Jan Kirchhoff, obviously pretty good pedigree, the fact that he's been at Bayern Munich for quite a while, but he came on against Spurs at the weekend and, well, it was one of the worst debuts in Premier League history, probably came on for half an hour. Yeah, put in a really half-hearted block on Eriksen's shot, which then looped in and then conceded a stupid penalty, which Kane stuck away. I think that, obviously that was a terrible debut for him. And I think the relegation...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Race, you know, as a whole, the way you look at it at the moment, I mean, Newcastle's still down in the bottom three. I mean, they've had two, you know, really impressive results of late, you know, the draw against United and then beating West Ham home, but they are still down there. In the bottom three, and they are third favourite to go down at the moment, Newcastle. Sunderland and Villa, pretty heavy favourites to join them. But who would you say, I mean, say, I think probably Villa and Sunderland probably doomed at the moment, the way they've been playing, but who do you think probably is going to be that third team at the moment?
I'd certainly agree Villa are doomed, even though they've had a little upturn in fortunes recently. Mm. I think they're dead and buried. Sunderland, I think, have got a bit more of a fighting chance. If only for Jermaine Defoe, he's got the goals that could potentially win a few big matches for them.
Yeah, and Allardyce as well, I'd say, as well. Just him being in charge, obviously.
Yeah,
that should help them, surely.
He's got a good pedigree. He's never been relegated before, so he knows how to keep teams in the division. So I certainly think they're still in the race. Having said that, I would have them as one of the three to go down. Of the other teams, I think Bournemouth, as I mentioned, they've done good enough business to stay up. Swansea, I think, with the likes of a Sigurdsson, I think they're probably got just enough to stay up. And Newcastle, the same now that they brought in Shelvey, and Wijnaldum's been very good. He's been very good so far this season. So I think they've got the quality. So I think my third team would probably be Norwich. I don't think they've got enough of a focal point. The striker is something that they're really lacking at the moment. And I don't think Naismith is going to solve those problems. So for me, I think Norwich would be the one to join Sunderland and Aston Villa. But it's going to be a close battle. I think all of them, apart with the probable exception of Villa, have got a real fighting chance of staying up as well.
Yeah, I think with Norwich, they'd be my favourite to go down at the moment, just because, I mean, I've been really impressed with Bournemouth this last sort of couple of months. I know, I mean, that win they had over Norwich was their first in a little while, but they really impressed in December, and that game against Norwich at the weekend, they completely dominated them in that one and really looked a class above Norwich there. And I think for me, it's going to be probably Norwich or Swansea to join the other two. I think Newcastle, like you said, they haven't really had enough wins recently, but the quality they have, I think, with their players and certainly across the park, I think they look pretty good, Newcastle. I think they should get out of it, but Swansea, probably for me, and Norwich. I mean, Swansea, what's your thoughts on the whole managerial situation? Obviously, they've just appointed Francesco Guidolin, who never managed in England before. Quite a very experienced coach, but it was an odd situation in the sense that, you know, they sacked Monk and then they went after Bielsa and he went to South America, the chairman, looking for a coach, and they couldn't sort out a deal. And then, you know, then they gave it to Curtis, who was just the interim originally, but now they said, right, you've got it to the end of the season, and now he hasn't been able to turn around results, and they've given it to Guidolin. It seems obviously very desperate, but I think they've handled it quite poorly. What's your take?
Yeah, it is a strange situation. I mean, obviously, he wasn't their first choice. Bielsa was, and then there was talk about Carvajal, there was talk about Rodgers maybe coming back. I don't think Guidolin would have even been on the original shortlist, been quite a way off the original shortlist. So, yeah, I think it does smack a bit of desperation. It's Alan Curtis, his first few games in charge, you know, there were signs of improvement, that things started looking a bit better, but then as soon as he got the role full-time until the end of the season, then things started to tail off a bit. And to do it so quickly, I think, was quite strange. It didn't really give him time to turn things around. He was always saying that he would still welcome a new manager coming in, and that's perhaps why Hugh Jenkins went for it. But to make the announcement that he would stay until the end of the season as interim manager and then bring in someone, I think it was two games later, it's quite strange, I think. But as far as Francesco Gridlin is concerned, I think he's a bit of an unknown quantity. Ashley Williams said after the win over Watford that he had to Google his name, find out a bit about him, and I think that's the same for most people. He is an unknown quantity in the Premier League, which, you know, it's a difficult league to hit the ground running in, really. I think he's got a big job on his hands to do that. The experience of being a manager, I think, will be a key. That's something Alan Curtis didn't have, and I think if Alan Curtis and him can combine their strengths, then it could be a decent team, because his pedigree is certainly good. He's had a lot of teams, as you mentioned, very experienced. Udinese was probably where he had his best times. He guided them to fourth in his first season and third in the Serie A, which is equal their best ever finish in the league. So he certainly got pedigree. They finished ahead of the likes of Juventus in those seasons and got them into the Champions League. So he's got experience. He can turn teams around. He can overachieve with teams, perhaps. But as I say, it's going to be a question of waiting to see how he gets on, because he is an unknown quantity. I think he does need to hit the ground running, because we've mentioned the teams around them starting to pick up a few more points. Even Aston Villa at the bottom have started to pick up a few more points. So it's important that he does make a quick start. But it's an interesting appointment for sure.
Yeah, I think with Swansea, they're just going to... I mean, I think they're just probably going to hope that the bulk of their squad that did so well last season is still largely there. I mean, I think they just hope that they can sort of eventually sort of outlast, you know, the others, and hopefully their quality proves. But I think the biggest mistake they've made the last, you know, year and a half really is never replacing Wilfred Bonny. I think he, you know, we talked about, you know, that they did so well in the sense that I think it was last January they sold him to City, and that they didn't really go for a replacement with all that money they had, and then we were sort of wondering, you know, who are they going to sign in the summer to really replace him? Because even though Bafétimbi Gomis, he's had his odd moments here and there, I think he's really not that good a striker. I think he looks quite clumsy a lot of the time. AU's come in and scored a few goals then, but, you know, he's not really an out-and-out striker in the same way Bonny was. And, you know, Bonny was really excellent for them, and they never really replaced him. I think that was their sort of biggest failing the last couple of years. And the fact, I mean, I still think, you know, sacking Monk really was a surprise decision. And when you just wonder what the players must be thinking about, like you said about Ashley Williams there, like having to, you know, they only just found out, and they're obviously sitting in the dressing room googling, oh, who's this guy who's going to be our new manager? And yeah, a bit of a weird situation. But he was there, Guy Delin, on a Monday night, watched the win over Watford. And Watford, they're one of sort of three teams we earmarked that, you know, really just struggling at the moment. What do you make of what's going on at Watford? You know, they've not won in five games, lost four in a row.
Yeah, I'm quite concerned for Watford, to be honest. I think they certainly overachieved the first half of the season, but I think they've got largely a Championship team, but they've got two strikers who belong in the top half of the Premier League, and perhaps a goalkeeper who belongs in the top half of the Premier League. Between them, you know, there hasn't been much change from the side that got promoted from the Championship. I think the reason they got promoted from the Championship was mainly Icalo and Deeney, and perhaps Gomez at the other end. So to come in and do so well, there was talk after the 3-0 win over Liverpool that made it four wins in a row, there was whispers of a top four challenge. I remember the question being asked in the interview after, because they went within, I think it was 1 point of the top four after that victory. So it was probably a deserved, because they were in very good form, they were looking full of confidence. And even the matches after that, drew against Chelsea, they looked good in that one, lost to Tottenham, lost to Man City, but again looked decent in that one, gave good teams a really tough run of it. And obviously Man
both
City
really late
won
goals
that one
in those games as well.
Tottenham and Man City both.
Yeah,
to get late goals to win it. So it was not a clear win. The last two games will really be a concern, though, and losing that confidence. They haven't played well in either of their last two games. Lost both of them, obviously. Lost four in a row now. Southampton was probably their worst performance of the season, but they weren't much better against Swansea on Monday night. Just never really got going. Icalo, he's been so good all season, but he didn't really get a sniff at goal. And yeah, I'm a bit worried for them. I think, as I mentioned, they have been overachieving with the team they've got. They rely very much, we mentioned it throughout the first half of the season, what happens if Icalo stops scoring, if Deeney stops setting them up. That seems to have happened lately, and they don't really have an answer to it. I think losing confidence will be big for them. They're bottom of the form table at the moment, so they've got to have lost a lot of confidence. For me, I can see them sliding down the table. I don't see them being dragged necessarily right into the relegation battle, but I don't see them scaling the heights that they did in the first half of the season either.
No, I think the thing with them is that, you know, the amount of signings they've made the last couple of seasons, it's just, there's so many, and the way it was all going at the start of the season, you know, winning games, scoring goals, it was a real feel-good factor. But now, when you've got a lot of characters in the dressing room who don't have a lot of experience playing together, a lot of foreign players in there, some of them won't be able to speak English all that well. I think this is when, you know, when times aren't going so well, when a team like that that's kind of been cobbled together, all different players from all different leagues, you know, in quite a short space of time, it's when you might just lose your rhythm. And that's when you've kind of, you've seen that, like you said, against Swansea on Monday night, they seem to lack ideas. And I mean, you've got Dean Inigala, who we know work really well up front, but if the rest of the team isn't working as one like it was at the start of the season, then you've got to worry about them. And talk about Watford's form, no win in five. Palace have got the same record, no win in five. They've lost three in a row as well. I mean, they're 2 points better off than Watford in the table, but they're similarly, you know, really dropped off the last few weeks. And you've just got to wonder about, because some of their results really have been quite poor as well, and they were looking so good, especially away from home at the start of the season, but just hasn't been the same in recent weeks. And you just think that probably the European push that was getting talked about maybe earlier on in the season might be out of the question now.
I think Palace have got enough to stay in the top half and stay pushing for those positions, those European positions. Obviously, their recent form hasn't been great, but they not quite this bad, but they have been through pretty poor spells under Pardew as well, and they usually end up winning a game out of nowhere that people don't really expect them, and then going on a bit of a run as well. So they do go on these peaks and troughs, really. And I think it certainly hasn't helped them in recent weeks, being without Yannick Bolasie. He's been injured for a while. They've had Johan Cabaye was suspended for a game as well. He's their top scorer this season, so it hasn't helped them. I think the big concern for them will be they haven't scored in five games. I think they'd expect the results to start coming as soon as they start getting goals again. And for me, we talked about transfers so far, but they need to bring in a good centre-forward. If they've got a fully fit side with those exciting players and a top-class centre-forward, I would back them to push for a top-four place. I think they're that good a team, and I think Pardew's that good a manager to do that this season. That is when other teams are dropping off, the likes of, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea way down the table, and United not looking all that convincing. I think this could be a chance for them to really challenge for top-four if they can get a top-class striker in the January transfer window. The fact that none of their registered recognised strikers this season, including Patrick Bamford, who's now left on loan, have scored from open play all season is a terrible record. I think they've got 23 goals in the league this season, and only one of them has come from one of those strikers, and that was from the penalty spot. So that's a terrible record. They've been relying on the likes of Bolasie, Zaha, Puncheon. Their defenders score a lot of goals as well, the likes of Scott Dan and Delaney get up, really good threat from set pieces, but they need that focal point. As you say, some poor results lately, weren't very good against Chelsea after conceding the first goal, to lose against Aston Villa when pretty much everything pointed to them winning that match, their away record, Villa's home record, really disappointing result, and then got well beaten by Man City, although 4-0 was probably a little harsh, they were still well beaten in that match. So there are concerns in terms of results and goals, but I think they've got enough about them to come back from this and certainly stay in the top half and maybe push for those European places.
Yeah, I think one thing about their last sort of couple of results, I mean, Wayne Hennessy in goal, he's had a bit of a torrid time recently. Yeah. He was excellent for them, because obviously he wasn't really, well, last season it was Spironi first choice, and then, you know, Alex McCarthy, who I've been surprised these last couple of seasons, McCarthy, because he was fantastic for Reading in the Championship. I think two seasons ago he was probably the Championship's best goalkeeper. Then QPR signed him for last season. He didn't get a look in QPR in the Premier League because of Rob Green. And then, I mean, he's made six appearances this season in the Premier League, I think. But Hennessy, he was doing so well. Now, he's obviously Wales number one as well, but he's looked a little shaky the last few weeks. And I mean, there's a few problems there. And yeah, you mentioned the strikes. I mean, that Wickham penalty that he took, I think it was at Stoke. I mean, the only reason he took that, I think, was because Cabaye wasn't playing. So the strikers, like you said, a real problem issue for them. But I mean, the other team we've earmarked here for, you know, been doing quite poorly in recent weeks are Everton, who, you know, we really thought, you know, I think it was about 3 months ago when they finished that terrible run of fixtures they had, and we really thought they were going to, because they got some decent results, quite a few draws, and we really thought they might, you know, really push on and maybe sort of push towards the top four just because of how, you know, exciting some of the football they played was. But you look at their recent record, it's just one win in nine Premier League games, and that win they did get was that one at Newcastle when Cleverley scored the, was it 95th minute with that looping header just after a corner. So without that sort of, you know, somewhat fortuitous late winner there, you know, they wouldn't have won a game the last nine. I mean, I know they've been unlucky if you flip it the other way, and obviously they should have won at Chelsea at the weekend bar that Terry offside, but I'm really surprised that Everton haven't really pushed up the table. I mean, they're still in the League Cup, you know, obviously take a lead to City for that second leg that's coming up soon, but the way they've been going in the league's really, really surprised me recently.
Yeah, me as well. It's quite a difficult one to grasp of Everton, because if I was an Everton fan, I'd be pretty excited about this team right now, because they've got a lot of youthful talent, they've got a lot of attacking talent as well. Lukaku's been in fantastic form this season. De La Feo looks very bright every time he goes forward. Barkley has arguably had his best season so far. So there's a lot to be excited about, but it's defensively, particularly defensively at home as well. They've got one of the best defensive records away from home in the division, but at home they just ship far too many goals. And I know there's been big questions over Tim Howard. The fans aren't happy with him. Whether they decide to replace him, it'll probably be at the end of the season. I can't see them doing it in January. Will be interesting to see. But defensively is certainly where they need to improve. And you look at the wins they've got this season, the only one against a top half team was against Southampton on the second day of the season. Southampton themselves have only just got into the top half of the table. All the others, their last three have all come against the bottom three. As you mentioned, that one very at the death against Newcastle was the only one in the last nine. So there are certainly concerns. It's a question that's be tough to answer for Roberto Martinez, because a lot of the things he would have seen, he'd be very happy with going forward against Chelsea. As you mentioned, they were impressive going forward yet again. But then just defensively, they need to get let down. They need to improve the balance in the side. And that's up for Martinez to do, really, on the training ground. Maybe bring in a few players in the January transfer window as well. But personally, I think the future is quite good for Everton. I think if I was a fan, I would be quite excited by them. But right now, there are questions that need answering, because the results haven't been good enough.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say about them, though, is what happens if they finish the season, you know, 10th in the table, not a good enough finish. And, you know, there's going to be, without doubt, bids for Lukaku, for Barkley, for Stones. You know, they're three brightest young players. You know, maybe De La Feo, if he keeps going the way, maybe Barca might come in with that buyback option they've got. And you do worry for them if they don't get a decent finish in the league. I mean, the one thing they probably need to do if they want to hang on to any of these players is win a trophy. I mean, if they've got that lead over City in the League Cup semi-final, that's coming up next week, the second leg at the Etihad, and they're still in the FA Cup. They've got Carlisle away in the next round, so that's a fairly easy draw. I think the one thing they have to do probably is win a trophy, because the way they're going at the moment, you can't really see them. Well, they need to really improve their Premier League form if they're going to get a Europa League place. Or you can't really see them getting into the top four because of their struggles recently. But I really think they need to win a cup. And obviously, it's the thing the club, you know, it's 21 years, I think it is, since they won the FA Cup in 95. So I think that's the one thing they have to do this season. And that League Cup game at City next week is absolutely massive.
Yeah, it is. And obviously, getting the win in the first leg is a big, big result for them. And I don't think the prospect of winning the cup can really be underestimated for them, because it's been too long for a club of their size to be without a trophy. As you mentioned, 21 years is not really good enough. And yeah, now you mention it, it could have a big say on whether a couple of players stay at the club. I think if they buy into the project, whether, you know, Martinez is going to be there if they do finish in the bottom half of the table, for example. I know there are a few question marks over him, even though he's got the exciting attacking style going defensively. There are question marks over him, so it'll be interesting to see what happens at the end of the season if they do win a trophy and if they don't win a trophy. If they can keep this squad together, though, as I mentioned, I think the future's quite bright for them, to be honest. Next season, I think you could see them pushing for certainly top 5-6 and maybe even top 4.
I think the one thing with them, maybe they just need to, I mean, I'm not sure who the defensive coach is for them, but Martinez is obviously working wonders going forward, and they've got obviously a really good formula for attacking football at the moment. But you just think maybe they need to bring in like a new assistant coach or a new first team coach to really help them iron out those problems at the back, because, you know, you would have thought, I mean, even recently, you know, Jagielka's come back and Baines has come back as well in recent, I mean, they haven't had Coleman the last couple of weeks, but if you know penciled in their back four there, you would have said it's a pretty strong one. I know there's a couple of quite young players there, and well, Stones is definitely, but I think certainly, and obviously Funes Mori's new to the Premier League as well, but I've just been really surprised at how poor they have been defensively, because on paper you'd think it would be, you know, a pretty decent defence.
Yeah, and they haven't really made any major howlers either. It hasn't been like they've been making mistakes every single week that directly lead to goals. It's just, I think they're a bit, maybe it's the whole style of the whole team. You know, maybe Lukaku needs to chase down more, from the front, start that defence from the front, and the attacking midfielders need to do the same. But I think the style they play, it's an open attacking style, it's very exciting. If they're gonna want this attacking, exciting attacking football, then they probably do need to sacrifice a bit of defensive solidity, but certainly not as much as they have done. They've got unlucky a few times. Thinking back to the Chelsea game on Saturday, there was that deflection for the second Chelsea goal, I think it was. So they have got unlucky at times, and there haven't been that big errors, but something is wrong there defensively for them, and something does need to change.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think, well, you look at this weekend's fixture, they've definitely got a good chance to get a good result there against Swansea at home. And I think, obviously, that should probably be quite an easy game for them. But then it's Guidland's first match in charge, isn't it, with Swansea? So that could maybe throw something into the mix. But that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks a lot, Barnes. And thanks very much for listening. Be sure to head to the website, sportsmile.co.uk, throughout the weekend for live commentaries, match reports, reaction and more. We'll be back next week with the podcast. See you then.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.